Welcome to this episode of Legal Moves Podcast. I'm your host, Zachary Strebeck. I'm also a California lawyer who works with board game and video game developers. Today, my guest is Scott Nicely, owner of Jovial Graphics. They're an art and design house that specializes in tabletop gaming. Welcome, Scott.
Thanks, Zach. Pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. So, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into the games industry?
Yeah, sure. Well, like most gamers, I started off board gaming very early in life, and started off with your typical, Risk, and through high school played a lot of Axis and Allies, Dungeons and Dragons, and all that kind of stuff. And then through college, I discovered miniature gaming and got into this small company you may have heard of called Games Workshop. They do this space game, Warhammer 40K. Got into that and really just enjoyed playing all the games and really got into the painting and the whole hobby aspect, and developed my passion for games. Mm-hmm. And also in school studied graphic design. And so when I finished up college, had a graphic design job working at a sign shop, and unfortunately got laid off, and my wife and I moved to Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And so during this transitional period, I decided that I was going to get a job in the games industry. I was going to work for Games Workshop in some capacity. Wasn't sure how, but I was going to do this in roughly about a year.
Okay.
And so we moved up to Minnesota, and I went to a small convention up here called Con of the North, and ran into Fantasy Flight Games. And at this time they had, I think their big title at that point was Twilight Imperium 2nd Edition, and I ended up spending pretty much the whole evening playing one of their newer games at the time, which I think was called Vortex, with Daryl Hardy, and thought nothing of it. Was still kind of working on my portfolio, still planning on somehow trying to get a job with Games Workshop, maybe as an illustrator or something. Mm-hmm. And about 6 months later or so, I get this email out of the blue from Daryl at Fantasy Flight saying that they were looking for a graphic artist, and if I was interested, would I send over a resume? So I did, and next thing you know, a couple months later, I'm working for Fantasy Flight Games as a graphic artist. Yeah, so, and then kind of the cool thing right off the bat, my first game there was Game of Thrones board game.
Mm-hmm.
And that year we also won an Origins Award for best graphic design of a board game. So
very cool.
Toot my own horn there. So
well, no, and I'll just say I think before we started you were afraid that you would go on a little too long in your stories, but I think that's a great story just to show the value of networking and meeting people and getting out there. I mean, if you want to work in the games industry, one way to do it is to meet people in the games industry. And then when they're thinking of something that they need, you're the guy that they're thinking of. Right. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It totally proves the adage. It's not what you know, it's who you know. Right.
So yeah, absolutely. Yep. Well, and luckily it's also what you know, because I mean, if you do good work, well, right, then they keep recommending you and right. And you keep working.
Right. Right. Actually, there's another funny story I have with that about what you know. So mm-hmm. After the interview, I interviewed with Chris Peterson and Brian Schomburg. And after the interview, Chris called me up to offer me the job. And but he wasn't sure, because I was coming from a corporate design background, mm-hmm. he wasn't 100% sure that I would be able to do fantasy and game graphics at that time. So I actually was put on like some sort of, what would you, like a probationary period or whatever, where every couple months or whatever, we had a mini review, and I obviously impress them for the first couple reviews, because I was there with them for three and a half, four years, I think. So yeah,
absolutely. Well, I mean, I think it's sort of normal to have someone on a probation period, but yeah, if it was specifically that they didn't think you could maybe do the type of work they were doing.
Yeah.
Obviously, you proved it to them, so that's good. So what made you go on and start your own company?
Well, after Fantasy Flight, I moved on to a local toy company, and I was working with them up until we made this new change in last April. And with the toy company, the last 2 years that I worked for them, the company really started to grow, and they also grew in a direction of doing a lot of licensed product. Mm-hmm. So working with Disney princesses, specifically Marvel. We worked with Nickelodeon, and we had 20th Century Fox with The Simpsons, and all of these types of things. So basically, two things kind of happened with that is that they started requiring more and more hours as we got bigger and bigger to be able to get the work done that we needed to have done.
Yeah.
And at the same time, because we're working with licensors, the way that works is you're given a style guide, and while you're able to create within their style guide, you're still kind of restricted to their pool of assets.
Absolutely.
So to speak. Yeah. So I was working tons more hours, and my creativity was kind of getting narrowed and narrowed. And I was also put on the Disney Princess line, which I worked on for...
That you've always wanted to do, right?
Sure. Well, I do have two young girls, so okay. They didn't mind so much. But as I told them when I was thinking about leaving and stuff, was that, I've tapped out all of my inner princess in the 3 years that I've been working on Disney Princess. I have no more glitter and no more pink ideas inside. I was looking for a change, and I really missed working in the game industry. So I thought, let's get in touch with some of the people I know and kind of do a little bit of fishing and see if there's any interest in getting some freelance on the side. And what I expected to be just a couple of jobs actually turned into more than I could handle and still keep working at the toy company.
That's awesome.
So from there, yeah, after this discussion with my wife to make sure this wasn't completely crazy, I decided to leave the toy company and try doing this full time.
Very cool. And sounds like it was a success.
Yeah.
Do you work with a team, or is it just you? How does the company work?
Well, like I said, we're still fairly young, mm-hmm. Starting just in April, and it's 90% all me.
Okay.
I do have a couple of projects where I've been working with some outside artists for illustration and stuff. But the goal would be to eventually get to that point where, I've got enough work that I am working consistently with maybe a couple of different artists, and possibly have another graphic artist to help get some of the more production art work done. But yeah, right now it's pretty much all me.
Okay.
All the time.
So, well, let's talk about your experiences working with developers. So first of all, how do developers find you? How do you advertise or get clients?
Right now, my main clients have all come from contacts that I've made in the past through Fantasy Flight, through a couple of different forums where I've met some different people and let them know that I was a graphic artist and stuff. So yeah, my first clients were pretty much just contacts that I made before. There's a forum on Board Game Geek for graphic arts and illustrators.
Yep.
Where about a year or so ago, it was very much people posting, looking for designers and stuff. And so I found some of my clients there. And then just recently I've actually started, advertising a little bit. The other thing that's now started to come online since I've been doing this, since April, and have a couple of clients that I've completed projects with, I've actually started to get referrals from them. So, I guess it's kind of a mixture of all of that now. Yeah. Referrals, a little bit of advertising, mm-hmm. and, contacts that I've made. So,
well, again, I think it illustrates these points that about the importance of networking, about having a presence online, which is super important when you're running a business, especially one over the internet, and then doing great work so that people want to refer you to other potential clients, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. The networking is huge.
Absolutely.
Like I said, I definitely would not have gotten my start had I not had a couple of people I could reach out to there. And then, like you say, having the good work. I've noticed, too, that being able to say that I work for Fantasy Flight, that adds a lot of credibility to me as a graphic artist. I think, let's see, what am I trying to say? I think that it lets a client know that I'm not just brand new on the scene and potentially going to disappear in another month or possibly not finish the job or something like that, because I've had industry.
I've had plenty of clients where they've hired an artist and the artist sort of either just disappears or stops responding or, I don't know, just can't finish the work. And yeah, it drives me crazy because, I don't know, you expect people to be professionals, but I don't know, a lot of newer developers are sourcing artists on places like DeviantArt, and you never know what the professionalism behind some of those people are, I guess. That's one of the issues for looking for cheap art for a low-budget board game is you get what you pay for, right?
Right, right. And I know another big thing that's really helped with clients and recognition is I was the graphic artist on Blood Bowl Team Manager with mm-hmm. Fantasy Flight, and I did probably about 80% of the graphic design work on Arkham Horror, which thankfully they have still not reprinted. Everything else I've worked on with Fantasy Flight, they've reprinted. So,
do they change your work when they go to the reprint?
Yeah,
it's a little sad.
Yeah, they do. So, which is fine, but it's like, man, you guys, you're killing my portfolio,
right?
So yeah, and a lot of people are like, oh my goodness, Arkham Horror, I love that game. So that, I think
that's credibility, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's been nice and helpful to have a couple of pieces out there that are visible enough that people instantly recognize, like, oh, you're that guy. Okay.
Right. Well, what if there are designers out there that are listening to this and they don't have that specific experience on high profile projects? How do you show the same credibility and professionalism, do you think?
You know, I think it starts off with your initial contacts in your initial communication. I've had a couple of clients tell me as I'm communicating with them, you know, that I reach out to them because they put an ad up looking for a graphic artist, or they're reaching out to me. Excuse me. And, you know, after a couple of emails, they'll I've had a couple of them reply like, my goodness, your emails and your correspondence is always so professional. I really appreciate that. So I would stress first, you know, don't be super casual in your emails. You know, treat it as a professional business right from the beginning, in those initial communications.
Right.
And I think second of all would be, you know, like I think you mentioned just earlier, about the web presence, you know, having a portfolio that shows your work and explains what you've done. And, you know, I think maybe, social media is another good thing, you know, showing your work in progress and, you know, on your Instagram or your Facebook or whatever, yeah. You know,
Or even, not even just the traditional social media, but places like BoardGameGeek and you could have a portfolio, people post their portfolios on that same forum you were talking about, the, game art and design, right?
Yeah. There's definitely people that post their portfolios and stuff there. That's also another opportunity for networking for someone new trying to get in too, because you can get involved in that community and kind of get involved in the discussion.
Absolutely.
I think if you know, a developer, a game designer, developer, publisher, or whatever sees your comments and that you're making credible comments, you know,
right.
that are constructive and whatnot, that also could help add that credibility to someone, you know, new, fresh out of school or you know, trying to build their name in the industry. So
I totally agree. One thing that you brought up in our emails before we recorded this was that a lot of people don't know the difference between illustration and graphic design, right? So you could explain, can you explain to the listeners what the difference is and why a developer would need someone who's going to do each or both?
Yeah, sure. I've had this happen a couple times now where a client comes across either my portfolio or something that I've done, mm-hmm. and asks me about illustration. And, you know, I'm bummed because, well, I'm not an illustrator, so I won't be able to get this job. But,
right.
you know, yeah, I think there's sometimes some confusion as to, you know, what is an illustrator versus a graphic designer. And why would you need both? Well, I like to say that the illustrator is the person, they create the story of the game. You know, their illustrations set the mood, the story. It tells the story and helps immerse you in that world,
mm-hmm.
That the game's trying to create. And then the graphic designer, they're helping give the message or make the rules clear, help the player understand what they're supposed to be doing and give the game information in a clear, concise, and efficient manner.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you need both because, you know, illustrators are very good at what they do, at telling stories. And as a graphic designer, you know, we're trained to communicate. Typically in design school, you know, you're taught to communicate via magazines, ads, and that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
Which translates really well to game design or user interface design, for another term for that. The other thing I think that a lot of people don't realize graphic designers often are focus on or trained in school and afterwards is brand identity. And when you're creating your game in your world, sometimes I think it would be very beneficial to a publisher or developer, designer, to bring that graphic artist in early, because that graphic artist can help shape the total package, right? And so they can help make sure that the graphic design of the design of the logo and the layout of the rules and how the diagrams are going to look and the framing and the framing on the cards and how the icons are going to lay out and all of that, make sure that's going to match and look great with the awesome illustrations that they're going to get.
Right.
You know, or they'd be able to work with the illustrator to make sure that, okay, well, on this card or on this box cover, you know, we're going to need to put information at on the top left corner, and we need information down across the bottom third. Mm-hmm. So make sure the illustrator puts the important part of the illustration everywhere else but these two spots that I need you know, I need to put my graphic information.
Yeah,
definitely. You know, so, definitely. So yeah, it's I think, you know, we both have our specialties. And I don't want to come across saying that, well, an illustrator can't do graphic design. And I don't want to say that a graphic artist can't do illustration.
Sure.
Because I feel like a lot of my graphic design is very illustrative. If you look at, for example, the Blood Bowl team manager, all of those frames are around that card art mm-hmm. is basically an illustration. Okay. It's just not a figure, you know. But I think, like I said, I think, you know, illustrators are trained to tell stories with pictures, and graphic artists are trained and specialize in getting information across quickly, concisely, and as efficiently as possible. So, I think it's really, it would be very beneficial to have, to definitely have both.
Right. I agree.
Yeah.
So when a developer does approach you to hire you, do they usually know what they need, whether it's illustration or graphic design or just sort of in general, or do you have to sort of work through the project and talk to them and figure out all the specific pieces of work that need to be done?
I've had clients that pretty much run that whole gamut. I've had a couple clients that come to me that say, okay, it's a card game. I know I need three different types of templates. And I need this kind of information on them. And it's a sci-fi, space opera type game. Go, you know, what can you come up with? So I've had that where I'm, you know, basically creating everything from scratch, working in tandem with the developer, all the way to, I've had a client that basically it's like, well, all of my art is done. I need you to lay out make all the files ready to go to the printer and make all the type, make sure that the typography and the icons look good and make sense and are all in the right place, which reminds me of a point I wanted to make about the difference between illustrators and graphic artists.
Sure.
Was the whole on the back end, the printing part of it.
Right. Absolutely.
I think that's another part where the graphic designer is more specialized in the printing aspect than the illustrator might be. But again, if the illustrator is very experienced and has maybe printed art books or whatever, they might also be familiar with that too. So, but I think typically, at least in my experience, the graphic artist is really, you know, that's one of our specialties is knowing how to prep all of that artwork and all of the cards and the books and the boxes and everything for the printer. So then to circle back to what we were talking about, which was where we were at, we were
working with the developer. Do they know?
So yeah, it's all ranges of that gamut. From some of my clients, yeah, I need they ask me for basically my ideas from scratch. Mm-hmm. To yeah, sometimes they come with a very specific idea, and they just want me to make it look good.
Right. I mean, I get a similar range. coming from new clients. You know, either they know specifically they want a specific contract, or they just are saying, what can you do for me? what do I need to get done? And then lay out the whole process, the legal process of getting their structure in place. Yeah. So, I mean, and that's good. I mean, it's good that you have experience having done it so that you can work them through the what's necessary, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I think, that's definitely something I've found that a lot of my newer clients really appreciate, is especially the back end, being able to deliver them files that they know they can hand off to a printer that will be, should be no problems for the printer, and will sail through the manufacturing process. Right, so. Right.
Exactly. And that's why you hire a professional, like in everything, yeah. You know, so they create they create that final product. You don't have to deal with it. Your time is better spent, as I always say, doing the game design or whatever your main job is, you know, and you hire someone to take care of these things. And so you don't have to worry about it. You're buying you may pay more, but you're buying your time back, because now you don't have to learn about full bleed and, you know, work safe or whatever. I don't know. I don't know these terms, but, you know, like getting everything set up for the printer. You don't have to deal with that. It's going to take you many hours, whereas, you know, an experienced designer will just know what they're doing, right?
Yes. Yeah. Typically, that's, you know, that's the way, as I'm assuming other designers work this way, but, you know, basically from the start, you're because I'm a designer, that's the way I think in safe zones and bleeds and margins. So when I'm laying things out, I'm already factoring all of that stuff in.
Yep. And do you interface directly with the manufacturer, or do you sort of, is the developer still the go-between in that kind of thing?
That also varies. I work with Tasty Minstrel Games, and basically once I'm done, I have print ready files. I hand those off and they deal with the printer. Okay. If there's any changes, they let me know, or anything that needs to be adjusted. And then there's some current projects I'm working with AEG on, and I'm actually going to be working with the printer on that one. I'll be getting all the proofs and approving everything. And so yeah, it really, really varies. I have another client that, once I'm done with the files, I don't hear from the printer. I don't see proofs. They handle all that back.
It's not necessarily a, how much experience does the designer or publisher have? It's sort of a case. There are other factors. I originally thought maybe it's just if someone, if a developer had done a lot of games, then maybe they don't necessarily need you to work with the printer directly. But, you know, it sounds like that's not the factor there, right? Is it just a convenience factor?
I think it's probably more a convenience factor of who's kind of set up to handle each situation, because I know the only client I have that is local that I can actually go see face to face is Fantasy Flight.
Okay.
You know, everybody else that I've worked with is all over the U.S. and Canada you know, a couple of people from Australia, and there was one client I was working with in Croatia and stuff. And so it doesn't necessarily, because of timing and everything, make sense in every situation for me to be the kind of their middleman with the printer. Mm-hmm. So it just makes more sense for them to deal with the printer so that the turnaround is quick.
Right.
Because typically once you get to that part where you're dealing with the printer and they're ready to print, they send you the proofs. They need that stuff back right away because they've got presses set up ready to go.
Yep.
So they don't want to wait any longer than they have to get your approvals, so they can get those presses running.
That makes sense.
So therefore, yeah, it's, I would say more often than not, it's the client deals with the printer a little more than I do. Just a few cases where I'm taking on those responsibilities as well.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about payment, because I know that payment for a lot of newer developers is one of the big, you know, the big hurdles that they have to get through. So how do you usually get paid? Do you get an upfront fee or an hourly rate or maybe a royalty share or some sort of hybrid?
Let's see. My entire process is that I have an hourly rate that I use to estimate what the total fee for each component of the project is going to be. Typically a box design is going to take me on average about 5 hours. So then I take the 5 hours times my hourly rate. And then that's my estimate for what the box will be. Once I get the estimate all figured out as to how long it's going to take and how much it's going to cost, what I'll do is then send that out for approval. And then there's typically a little bit of negotiating there. I've been finding that sometimes I'm overestimating the amount of work the client really wants me to spend on certain components. And so we'll kind of talk back and forth and get that dialed in. And get that approved. And then currently I'm doing a half up front. And then if the project goes for more than 30 days, I will ask for 25% at the 30-day mark. And then the final 25% at the completion of the files.
Okay.
And then in certain cases, depending on how cash flow is going, one interesting thing that I've started doing is I'll give a discount if they can pay for the entire job up front.
Right.
So, being a new business and still trying to get the cash flow to work from month to month, I'm finding I need a couple different creative ways to incentivize clients.
I hear you. I do something similar. I mean, usually I don't work with an hourly rate. Usually, although lately I've been doing more of that, just because things have been sort of unknown. I'll just quote you a fee up front and generally get paid up front, right? But
right.
Built into that is kind of a discount. Like, here's the I will probably spend longer if I were to just charge you my hourly rate. I probably would have spent longer on it than what I'm charging you up front. But by paying up front, like you said, you're getting that discount, right? Because and you're also getting the benefit of knowing exactly how much this contract will cost, right? Rather than who knows, you're going to get a bill from the lawyer in a month. It's going to be, you know, some ridiculous amount of hours. I think it's better for everyone, especially in, you know, an industry with tighter margins than some other things. Getting those fees taken care of up front, I think is a good way to go. Okay. What about revisions and things like that? Is that sort of built into your estimate?
Yeah, I try and when I'm factoring in my hours for the estimate. Yeah, I try and factor in a certain number of revisions or how many times I might have to go back and touch a project. That's in the creative industry like this, it's really tough because even when you are 100% certain in your mind that you are on the same page with your client.
Right, exactly.
And
exactly.
You turn those sketches in and they come back and they're like, that's not what I was thinking at all. You know, it's really hard to guess, you know, how many revisions that's going to be. When I first started, actually even before April, I've been doing some freelance off and on for about a year previous to this past April. And I had a client there that we weren't on the same page, and I quoted him a price and we went round and round and with revisions, and I just couldn't get what he wanted. And eventually we got there, but man, we had blown through my budgeted time and my estimate, and
right.
and you really can't go back and ask for more money. So it's really been, that's kind of been a struggle, is how to factor in revisions. That's a fair amount of revisions, but yet I've noticed earlier when I would kind of try and word that into an estimate or say, well, you only get this many revisions or something, you know, then the client would kind of push back and be kind of hesitant to.
Well, sure, because they want to get what they want, right?
Right. So they're like, what? You want me to pay this much money, but you're not guaranteeing that I can make a number of revisions. So yeah, it's a fine line that I'm still trying to figure out, you know, mm-hmm. where that all falls and how to do that well.
Yeah, and again, I mean, our services are pretty analogous even in this. Like, I'll write a contract. I've quoted that flat fee up front, and I will put a reasonable number of revisions in there, but, you know, who's to say what's reasonable? And, you know, then they send it to the other side, and the other side has changes that they want made, and, you know, and it kind of goes back and forth. And I don't mind doing that, but at some point it becomes kind of ridiculous. And so I also struggle with how do you limit that kind of thing? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah, it's either my estimate or my invoice document. I have a line in the fine print down at the bottom, something about if the scope of the work exceeds the initial design brief or something worded to that nature, then we will renegotiate the estimate. And I'm always hesitant about putting that in, because I know that usually in the client's mind puts up a red flag. Again, that kind of like them thinking, well, wait a minute, what is the scope, you know, exceeding the scope of the work? What does that mean? But thankfully, I've never had to kind of go back and try and renegotiate something because it became bigger than what we originally agreed on. But it is kind of nice having that clause in the estimate, just as so then I can go back to that and kind of have that as a jumping off point for that discussion if I should ever need it. So. I'm not quite sure what the point there was, but I hit it.
No, I think it's, I think it's important to know the artist side of things on this kind of thing. So you generally have this written estimate. Is that working as your contract, I suppose?
I have my three main documents are my initial estimate, where I'm trying to tally up what I'm going to do for the client and spell out how many hours each component's going to be and how much it's going to cost. Then I have a separate contract, which basically just reiterates what we're working on, start date, due date. It covers who owns everything when we're done, and some legalese for if there's a cancellation, and basically I think that's about it for that. And then I have an invoice document that I used at the end, or sometimes if they pay up front, I use the invoice at the beginning, which is nice. But so those are my three main legal contract desk.
So you mentioned who owns the rights to the work. What is the normal practice in your work? Who's going to own the rights to these?
Typically, it's always work for hire. So as soon as I'm done with the work and they've paid for it, you know, all rights and licenses and everything basically reverts to the client. And then I retain the ability, you know, to post samples in my portfolio and that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's pretty much once I'm done with it, they own it all, and they can do whatever they want. I do have a clause in my contract that states that that I should get the first opportunity for any expansions or additional work. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's, I think that the way it's worded is it's a nice
reminder or whatever. I don't think it's legally binding that if they do an expansion, they have to come back to me.
Yeah, it's called a right of first refusal, right? Or a first option, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So yeah, they but yeah, all copyrights, all trademarks, all that basically is owned by the client once I'm done.
Well, and I generally recommend to my clients that you want to be able to own all that work, because you know, if your game becomes popular and you're going to be printing it for the next, you know, 100 years, you should really be owning that work and not relying on a license that could be potentially terminated at some point from the artist. No offense to the artists, but you know, you're getting paid to do this work, and I, you know, and some artists will say, well, it's a question of how much you're paying me, right? If you pay just a little bit because you're trying to do it cheaply, then you're just going to get a license and the artist is going to be able to use it separately, right? But if you pay enough, yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, money talks, right? And if you pay enough, the artist will probably be okay with relinquishing that work.
Yeah, I think that's right.
All right, so we're going to wrap this up. We're hitting our time limit. So could you just give me maybe some tips for those that are hiring artists to work on their games to make the process either go smoothly or to show that they're respecting the work of the artists? Because I think that's an issue that comes up a lot.
Yeah, sure. I think, like I said before, you know, good professional communication right off the get-go is important on both ends, as an artist and a designer, and as a developer wanting to hire someone. You know, making sure you keep a professional tone in your emails or whatever it is you're using to reach out. And let's see, when you're contacting either a graphic artist or an artist looking for work, I think it's good to know what you want before you contact them. So, an example would be like for an artist, kind of know how many pieces you're looking for. Mm-hmm. Maybe even knowing like the final size. Is this card art? Is this box art? Is this I'm using this only for marketing materials? You know, because some of that information does factor into how the artist and the designer creates those pieces. Let's see. So yeah, number of pieces. Also, especially with the graphic artist, it's good to know components. You know, do you need icons, and how many icons are there going to be? Is there a punch board and tokens, card types, card backs? Also, like I mentioned before too, graphic artists are really good at branding. So, you know, are you looking for a logo and packaging ideas? How is the box going to lay out, and what's that going to look like? You know, so and I think a lot of stuff, I think developers know most of this stuff, because by the time you're thinking about getting an artist, you probably already have gone to prototype, right?
Yeah, so yeah, absolutely.
So that's pretty easy. And actually, that just made me think of something else, where sometimes a graphic artist can also help a developer when it comes to art descriptions for your illustrator.
Oh, right.
Actually, I've done this for a couple of my clients, and it's worked out really well for them, where they kind of have the idea of what they want, and then I direct the artist and kind of help shape that description or write up that description for the artist, because even though we specialize in different areas, we speak the same language, right?
Sure.
Another plug for bringing that graphic artist in early is, you know, he can help you communicate with your illustrator.
Well, do you ever get hired to help choose illustrators, I guess, that are going to be in line with the style of what you're going for with the graphic design?
Yeah, actually, the games that I'm working on with AEG. I am not only the graphic artist, but I am technically the art director. So right. I searched and searched portfolios, picked the artists, wrote the art descriptions, and kind of guided them on the changes and stuff as the art came in. So yeah, it's something I've done, and I really enjoyed doing that part too. Because it like I said, in the end, everything goes well together. It all ties up in a nice package, you know.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that's going to wrap up this episode of Legal Moves. Thank you again to my guest, Scott Nicely. Scott, where can our listeners find you?
Well, you can find me at my website, which is jovialgraphics.com. And I also have an Instagram account where I try to post as often as I can. I believe that is Scott Nicely Nicely on Instagram. Right. So you can see what I'm working on there.
To follow you. You can follow me on Instagram at Z Striebeck.
All right.
Look at dumb pictures of me. I don't even know. It's probably embarrassing. You may not want to see that actually if you're a client. Yeah. Maybe a little more personal than
you'd like. TMI.
Yeah. Not I mean all right. I mean it's just pictures of food and stuff. I mean it's I don't know. It's pretty lame. So okay, and you can find me professionally at gamelawyerblog.com. You can read more on my blog about the legal aspects of game development. And make sure to get on iTunes and review us. Just click a little 5-star review and you don't have to bother with the text, but those reviews really help. Lastly, I have launched a Patreon campaign to cover the hosting of this podcast and to improve the show. Like, I want to buy equipment to turn this into a video podcast. So check that out at patreon.com/legalmoves and help make the show bigger and better. Scott, thanks again for coming in. I appreciate you being on here. This was super interesting.
Yeah, thanks, Zach, for having me. It's been a blast. I love talking about this stuff. So.
And I actually have way more questions that we didn't even address, so I may have to have you back on at some point, okay?
Anytime, man. Anytime. All right.
And listeners, I will see you on the next episode.